We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the news quiz. We start with a safety warning, read by Zeb Soames.
Safety warning. Opening this box will result in death by electrocution and a £50 fine.
Our thanks to Steve Martin for sending that in. Gosh, what quiet evenings he must have. Now let's meet the teams. Really welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Angela Barnes. And opposite them, on my left, Helen Lewis and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, who is not dead?
OK, well, one of the problems with recording a topical satirical show is the news can change very rapidly. And this show is recorded on a Wednesday morning, isn't it, audience? And we've just heard about the horrible execution of Arkady Babchenko in Kiev, and many people, especially people involved in journalism, are devastated by this. But I'm going to go out on a limb here. I mean, I might look like an idiot after, you know, when the show's broadcast, but I think there's more to this. There's something that doesn't add up. Why was there no incident crime tape at the scene? No one collecting forensics? Four shots to the back. A professional execution would be at least one in the head, which is fatal. So I'm going to... I don't know. There's just something... I think that there's a hoax. By Friday or Saturday, we will be saying that this was a put-up job in order to entrap potential assassins. And by then, Babchenko will be revealed to be alive again, but friendless. His wife's going to be very, very angry because she'd already moved on. And found she's lumbered. But people got really angry about it. I was watching a lot of journalists getting really angry with this poor Babchenko guy. And you think, well, what's he supposed to do? You know, the police come to him, the security services come to him and say, look, you're going to get whacked unless you do exactly what we say. And what that is, you've got to pretend to be dead for only for 24 hours, you know. I mean, Jesus did 48. Mary Magdalene was very pleased to see him. She didn't sort of get all angry about it. But journalists are, like, fulminating with anger about him and saying, you know, you shouldn't have done this. Do you think, look, if it was you and they said to you, look, you're going to get assassinated unless you play ball with us, you know, you'd do anything. You'd walk around in your partner's underpants, you know. That was certainly the excuse that I gave. An assassination thing, but of course she would. But people, I was watching people on, you know, on telly going, this is outrageous, this terrible man, he's just awful, he's a disgrace to journalism, it's fake news, and this is handing a victory to the Russians. So to condemn it, I don't know how Helen would. I mean, Helen's been to places where you could have been killed, haven't you? You've been quite brave. You don't just...
I've been to Austerlitz.
You've been to Austerlitz. So you don't sit in TV studios slagging off journalists who are in danger of being murdered.
Yeah, I think the problem is, as a journalist, you just get that thrown at you so much. Like, everything's fake. Where's your proof that the Twin Towers really fell down? You know, where's the proof of this? Where's the proof of that? And I think that's just... it. You know when you are pre-annoyed by things that you know are going to happen in the future?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's us. We're pre-annoyed by the fact we know the next 3 years of our lives.
Yeah, but you always know what's going to happen in the future because you control via the liberal elite. Because I was reading about the Illuminati online earlier. And apparently, the Rothschilds manipulate the world, which is actually flat, manipulate it into looking round so that they look less fat when they're standing on it.
Susan.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to say is I have considered faking my own death to find out what people think about me. I have considered that. You know when there's someone you're not sure whether they like you or not? I have considered pretending to die to find out. I mean, I've not gone through with it. So, but the one thing I have faked, and it's not of the same level, but we're sharing. I pretended to be a rucksack once. I was at the Fringe, and there was a party I wasn't invited to. And so I jumped on Greg Davis's back and pretended to be a rucksack, like one of those Garfield rucksacks, like Yoda or something. And we got in.
Were you wearing any sort of
costume?
It was
just me. I said, Greg, I've not got an invite. He had an invite. I said, let me go on your back. Off we popped. There was no bag checks at that point. There was no security.
Just as well,
so
really.
No one had a rummage around inside me.
Yeah, you need to sort of fake your death for longer, don't you, to the point where someone has actually written a eulogy that you've asked them? They would be quite surprised. If it's someone that you don't know they like you or not, and you say, could you...
I mean, I've also discussed with my wife how long I want her to mourn for if I pass away. You know, there's a 10... Sorry, it's a light... 15 years we've been together. We've got to that stage. We can't talk about anything else. We know everything. We've gotten to death. So we were... If I die, like, I know there's a fashion for moving on. I don't want her to move on. I want her to weep. I want her to never marry again. I want her to have portraits of me around the house. And I've said I'll haunt her until she dies. I mean, it's been a long time. Lesbian relationships can be tough.
I'm the opposite. See, if I die, I want to know that my other half can continue without me. I like that he's not relying on me to stay... Like, and I know that for a fact, at least once a week, he'll leave the room, turn the light off, completely forgetting that I'm still in. Yeah. I know he'll be fine. I do wonder if this whole story does mean it's going to cast doubt on other stories, you know, where Russia have been the perpetrators recently. You know, it brings to mind the whole thing that's happened with the Skripals and the poisoning in Salisbury. You know, maybe we're going to find out that when they were found collapsed outside that shopping centre in Salisbury, they weren't poisoned, they'd just been to Lush.
Do you know, that's possible because I can't go near that shop.
Oh, it's awful.
As soon as I go near a Lush, I get a migraine and I feel all funny.
Also, Novichok, that is an Aldi version of a Cornetto. That's what that is.
And sometimes people get me Lush bath bombs. Now, I don't want one of them. Not only do they get all gritty right up in the thingamabob. But the smell of it could make me faint.
Yeah.
And people go, I've got your Lush bath bomb. And it's like, why don't you just punch me in the face instead?
I think the most shocking aspect of this is that you don't enjoy a bath bomb, Susan.
No, do you know what I enjoy? Relaxed. What's the ultimate treat? It's matey. That's the ultimate treat. Yeah. Because we weren't allowed matey when I was younger because it was too expensive, so now I travel with matey. I want a bath with matey.
You only use sort of children's products and things like that? Do you use sort of Johnson's No More Tears and stuff? Does literally everything else give you a gritty chump?
Well, no, it's... You know what?
Is the fact that he managed to success. So he got shot in the street and then played dead, effectively. Now, I mean, I've seen quite a lot of theatre recently, and even professional actors can't do that, right? They always lie at the end of Hamlet or Macbeth, with their chest heaving like a golden retriever because they're really knackered. And this guy should be sent to the RSC to train them. I'm sure, haven't you? You must have done a stage death in your time.
Certainly in my comedy work.
He'll just get loads of parts in Silent Witness, won't he?
Yeah.
That's always disappointing for a young actor, isn't it? They might be involved in nudity, and there's not much dialogue.
Are you good with the cold?
Yeah. On Friday evening, when the Russians have actually killed him, we're going to sound like such bastards.
This is the extraordinary tale of dissident Russian journalist Arkady Babchenko, who is reported dead on Tuesday, only to turn up at a press conference 24 hours later, alive and well. Of course, it's easy to forget the real victim here, the Russian hitman who, for a day and a half, believed he could kill people with his mind. Upon hearing the news, one of his colleagues collapsed on the floor in shock, but everyone just said, "Oh, come on, Jeff, we're not falling for that now." Sadly, Jeff was pronounced dead at the scene. Although, let's hold that thought until tomorrow. This reminds me of the time we all said an emotional goodbye to Mr. Snuffles, the family hamster, only to find him 2 days later, wide-eyed and bedraggled, clinging desperately to the underside of the loo seat. Took a couple more flushes, but it's amazing what a toilet brush and some bleach can do. 2 points to Jeremy. Angela, who's no longer facing a rosy future?
Right, so this is Roseanne Barr this week. Her ABC sitcom has been cancelled because of a racist tweet that she did. Now, this is not her first time at the Bigot Rodeo. She's been a conspiracy theorist for a while. It's a bit like they've employed a nanny with a satanic face tattoo and then been surprised that it sacrificed the baby. You know, that's... I liked it. She used the excuse that she was on sleeping pills. That apparently is why she tweeted the racist abuse. And to be fair, we've all been there. You know, I mean, I've had problems with sleepwalking. I once woke up on an EDL march. You know, it's happened to me. much. So I think there's a link between insomnia and race. I've never seen a racist cat. That's all I'm saying.
If you see someone rubbing their eyes, do you think, racist?
Yeah.
How do you feel about this, Susan?
Well, she's a curious kettle of fish, is Roseanne Barr. She blamed it on Ambien, which was the sleeping tablet she was taking, and fair play to Ambien, they sent a tweet saying Ambien has many side effects that do not include racism, which I thought was a lovely way of coming back towards it. And the problem is they were wanting a working-class sitcom that reflected Trump's America, and that's what they've got. This is the problem. My social media feed is entirely full of pictures of cats, so I never get into any trouble at all. And if I have a drink, which is very rare, I do what you should do, which is lock away your phone and then hide the key somewhere you won't, drunk Susan won't find, so that I can't tweet anything, and I just post pictures of cats just what? In case. I'm not saying I'm racist.
Have you ever got so drunk that you've tweeted a picture of the effect that bath bombs have on your skin?
And as well, she's been tweeting support for Tommy Robinson, which really helps matters, and just going on a complete kind of right-wing racist rampage. It's extraordinary to see.
Tommy Robinson, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's in prison for contempt of court. He was told that if he live-streamed the court case, then his suspended sentence would be activated and he would be imprisoned, and that's what's happened, right? And then there's these teams of people that are supporting him, and I just think you people are the reason that packets of nuts still have to say may contain nuts.
I haven't been able to take Tommy Robinson seriously since my former colleague Dan told me that he used to run a tanning salon.
Yeah.
And that's bad far-right politics, isn't it? I mean, he literally took money to make people browner.
These are, and I'm going to be frank about this, the misadventures of US comedian Roseanne Barr, who this week had her hit sitcom cancelled by broadcaster ABC after she posted a racist comment on Twitter. It's not the first time this sort of thing has happened. Who can forget the time Nicholas Lyndhurst interrupted a recording of Goodnight Sweetheart to deliver an unscripted 15-minute monologue on the subject of what I really think about the Persians? There was, I think it's fair to say, no time travelling back from that one. If Radio 4 listeners are unfamiliar with Roseanne Barr, just imagine Hattie Jakes, but if she was the bride of Satan rather than John Le Mesurier. It's possible that by tweeting a racist comment, Roseanne was simply trying to give her right-wing audience what they wanted, trying to show she's edgy, that she's down with the kids. What I'm essentially trying to say is that the whole incident is absolutely no different from when David Cameron said he liked the Smiths. Also this week, former leader of the English Defence League, Tommy Robinson, received a 13-month jail sentence for contempt of court. There is outrage at his imprisonment, with many people saying that he's done nothing wrong. Of course, Robinson is a law-abiding, upstanding citizen of the British Isles, with only a couple of convictions for drunken assault of a police officer, football hooliganism, abusive behaviour, instigating a 100-man brawl, breaching bail conditions, common assault, entering the United States illegally on someone else's passport, 3 charges of conspiracy to commit fraud by misrepresentation, a previous incident of contempt of court. Something of a rough diamond, Ben. Who isn't? The guy's a character. This country needs more of them. Two points to Angela. Helen, whose decision not to repeal could have an ulterior motive? If you're going to be sick, do it somewhere else.
This must be Theresa May is now in a bit of a bind over abortion law in Northern Ireland. I was in Dublin at the weekend for the Irish vote, and I was in Dublin Castle, and we waited for ages for the results. And then eventually a message went round that said, the results have got stuck in a fax machine in Donegal. Probably, from the sound of it, the people I was with, the only fax machine in Donegal. So this is a massive challenge for Theresa May. She's got to stand up to her supply and confidence partners in the DUP. She's got to say, look, you claim that you're unionist, you say you want the same laws as the rest of the UK. How about in this case? And I just have this sort of sneaking feeling that she's not going to do that. Call me psychic, if you will. I mean, you know, by Friday, who knows, she might be out there in a cape taking on Arlene Foster in hand-to-hand combat, but I'd bet £5 not.
The problem is, isn't it, that Theresa May needs the DUP. She needs them so she doesn't want to upset them. And it's like when you're in the back of a taxi, you know, and you've got a taxi driver who's got a few dodgy views, but you really need to get somewhere on time. And so you sort of ignore them and bite your tongue a little bit. But eventually, she's just got to go, do you know what, Arlene, pull over, because this is too much even for me, and I sell arms to Saudis, so...
think she'd give a tip as well as the 1 billion quid.
I had a taxi driver once who started showing me pictures of Jack the Ripper's victims through the like glass screen.
Well, were they on his phone or laminated?
No, he'd got them in a ring binder.
Oh, right.
What?
Oh,
wow.
That's a red flag there, Helen. Yeah. That is. You know, I don't like to judge people when I don't know them, but that's definitely a red flag.
Had they all been in his cap, had they?
And the argument, of course, with the Irish referendum was that men shouldn't have any say over women's reproductive rights. And what I'm going to do is be quite controversial here. I don't mind men having a say over my reproductive rights, as long as it's a quid pro quo. So, if something happens to your dingly danglies, women get to see whether or not we're bothered about it. And then I get to examine you. And I really have no idea what I'm doing. I mean, I imagine it's like, you know, when you catch a fish and you hit it against the boat.
That's right, yeah. Will you be part of a team, or are you giving yourself...
No, just me.
I think you're possibly interviewing for a job that's not been advertised.
I just think you're going to regret this. As a heterosexual, I have to say, opting out of scrotums is one of the best things about being a lesbian, surely.
There's a slight morbid fascination. There's been a lot of chat about if Theresa May is a feminist, she needs to step in. This is not a feminist issue. You don't need to be a feminist to say that women should have equal rights. What she is a coward. And unless she steps in, that is one part of the United Kingdom where not only gay people, but women do not have the same rights as other parts of the United Kingdom. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not about her being a feminist. We shouldn't attack her on that. Feminists are very different. It's about not taking on a blatant breach of human rights, which should have been sorted years ago.
This is Jeremy. Now going to encourage Rees-Mogg to want a hard border, isn't it? Because women in the north of Ireland, in the six counties, will want to go to the 32 counties where they can have a safe and legal abortion. Because for years, people made the journey, you know, from Ireland to England. And Tommy Robinson's parents actually came to England from Ireland and then weirdly did not have an abortion.
Something really unpleasant there, Jeremy, which is you've said the phrase Jacob Rees-Mogg's hard border in a way that will always make it feel like a euphemism from now on.
Something that Susan will be forcibly inspecting sometime soon. This is the fallout from the Irish referendum on abortion, with Theresa May saying she has no plans to liberalise abortion rights in Northern Ireland, insisting it was down to the region's devolved assembly, which is currently suspended. Essentially, the political equivalent of don't ask me, ask your father, except your father is dead. Theresa May said the Irish referendum delivered a clear result before weepily asking, what does that feel like? Theresa May described the referendum result as an impressive show of democracy, showing all the enthusiasm of Gerry Adams after he's been handed a bowler hat and a drum and asked to keep up the tempo from the back. The United Nations described Northern Ireland's abortion laws as a transgression of human rights, suggesting that we may have finally found a country Jeremy Corbyn's happy to invade. 2 points to Helen. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Angela have 4, and so too to Helen and Susan. We start round two with an extract from an article in the Radio Times.
In an interview this week, Hugh Grant said that getting older and uglier had made his parts more varied.
Thanks to Matthew Wright for sending us that. Jeremy.
Dove non c'è un governo.
I don't know what I've just asked you, but do you?
That was Italian. I've got a little bit of Italian, only because I did Latin, so I only understand those bits of Italian that sort of would have been relevant in ancient Rome, like forum and volcano and holy crap. But, yes, the Italian elections took place a few weeks ago and they were inconclusive. And then in recent days, the Five Star Movement led by Luigi Di Maio and the League led by Matteo Salvini formed a coalition and appointed a Prime Minister, Giuseppe Conte, who's this obscure academic with a dodgy CV. And he appointed a Finance Minister called Paolo Salvano, who is very, very hostile to single currency. So President Sergio Mattarella blocked that appointment, so Conte then resigned. So then Mattarella appointed a technocratic prime minister called Carlo Cottarelli, who's also known as Mr. Scissors because he's got the same problem as Johnny Depp in that film. And this generated a huge constitutional crisis with threats of impeachment of President Mattarella and whether or not there would be more elections. Now, by this time, of course, it's lunchtime.
This is a lot more informative than the half hour I spent on Wikipedia before the show.
Is this a situation that you think Arlene Foster could sort of prop up? Do you think she's endlessly refreshing her inbox?
So as things stand, no one's been assassinated in Italy, although it's possible because the mafia will want to get involved. Berlusconi, despite this new populist movement supposedly being against corruption and against the political establishment, has the blessing of Silvio Berlusconi.
He's running a political party against himself. Bold. That's populist. That is anti-establishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm the problem, is his slogan.
Well, he's kind of the mafia.
Beppe Grillo's... Grillo. He's not the leader now, though, is he?
No, he stood down in favour of Luigi Di Maio.
Yeah, who is 31. That's a decade younger than me. That's quite depressing. See, and I saw the press kept calling him an ex-waiter. Like, that was a sort of put-down. I thought we all started with a rubbish job, didn't we?
Comedian, that's us. I'm still hoping, though, you know.
I just calling him ex-waiter is just like calling him an ex-schoolboy or an ex-baby. It's not relevant to what he's doing, really.
Yeah, former baby, Mr. Berlusconi.
Yeah, exactly.
Being honest, and I know it's not fashionable to say I don't have any interest in the news, but I find it...
Heck of a time to bring it up. Yeah.
I find it very difficult to get excited about any
week 9
of this.
I'm not actually into dancing. Yeah.
I find it very difficult to get excited about this particular story. My only priority, Miles, is I'm going on my first holiday in 5 years in July, and I'm going on a cruise because I want to be Jane McDonald. And it's going to Italy, and I've bought a cravat. Mm-hmm. And I hope they sort themselves out, because I look jaunty. And I spend a lot of my evenings in front of the mirror practising my cravat and my little blazer I've got. And I'm going to play deck games with old people and
quoits.
Hopefully win quoits and things. So I know it's selfish, and please don't tweet me, hashtag selfish, but really I've got a cruise in July, so if it could all be sorted, because nothing would inconvenience the buses more than perhaps some form of turmoil. And
I just feel like whatever the Eurozone crisis is, it's probably not going to involve strafing cruise ships.
That would be amazing.
You say that, but knowing my luck,
Susan, it's not selfish at all. If you're listening, Italy, buck up, chaps. This is the ongoing political crisis in Italy, where there is still no government more than 3 months after the election. It's all very complicated, but to summarise it briefly, Brutus stabbed Julius Caesar, then Gaza... And Gaza had a brief spell at Lazio, but apart from that, things are yet to entirely settle down. I had no idea the Italians even had elections. Going by recent history, I assume they chose their leaders based solely on who could lap a tiramisu off a bosom the quickest. It does sometimes seem that Italy is perpetually in crisis, but this is a real crisis, possibly the most serious crisis Italy has experienced since the unexpected moment of stability crisis of 1854. Of course, this is what happens when you let people take a nap in the afternoon. Too much energy. Anyway, let's hope they soon get put out of their misery thanks to the antics of our old friend Mount Vesuvius. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, quel homme régné s'est devenu pompier?
Yes. oui. This is a story a lot of people will have seen the video. It was a remarkable video. A gentleman in Paris left his infant son on his own in his flat. and didn't come back to look after his infant son because he was playing Pokemon Go. And the child fell two stories down and managed to hang on to the balcony. And there was a crowd underneath, and a man, Mamadou Gassama, who is an undocumented refugee from Mali, scaled the building and saved the child. And it's a remarkable video. It's wonderful. He just goes straight up, and they're calling him Spider-Man. And he went straight up and saved the child. And as a result of that, the president of France said, this is good, gave him citizenship and a job as a fireman. And there's a, you know, him saying, well done. Now, this man was living without documentation in a slum until that point, and he's one of these people that the French Parliament was at the same time debating legislation to remove people like him from the country. But he did it, so he got a prize, which puts a huge amount of pressure on anyone else in the country. If that's what you have to do in order to be accepted into a country, that's putting on... It's like, do we have to have the Hunger Games for immigrants to see how brave they are before we let them in?
The bit I didn't understand about it was the bit where he got made a fireman as a prize.
Yeah.
And I was like, that being sent into burning buildings is quite a tough job. I mean, if someone said, Helen, you've done really well on the news quiz, we're going to make you a fireman. I don't want to be a fireman. That's horrifying.
Well, that's, when did the reward for being brave be do more bravery? Yeah. When did that? Because that's like if I unblocked a toilet, they go, congratulations, you're now a plumber.
I'm worried that it's going to give Theresa May ideas and she's going to enhance the hostile environment by dangling children off of buildings to lure undocumented refugees and entrap them, you know. So she'll deport them. I mean, she won't give them a job and a légion d'honneur.
Did you see the footage of it, though? It was amazing. He did four stories in 30 seconds, which is a bit like a phone call with my mum.
The thing I found most relatable about the video was, did you see, he's sprinting up the wall, and there's a lot of people who've tentatively gone up the first bit and then backed away. And I thought, yeah, we're all those people.
Yeah.
But you feel a bit sorry for those people, because they're like, my boyfriend did a really romantic thing for me on Valentine's Day. Like, he left me he was away, so he left me a treasure hunt at home with cryptic crossword clues. And I tweeted about it, and it went a little bit viral. And so all my boyfriend's friends were like, cheers, mate, you've made us look really bad. And so I thought those poor people at the bottom were just like, well, I would have been the one to rescue them.
Did any of the clues lead to you having to scale the outside of a building?
I couldn't have done it.
Susan, you'll have to expand.
What I'm saying is I don't have the height to save a child.
He wasn't the same height as the building. He did have to... Yeah. You'd have to go up
it. No, but he was...
You'll need a different reason why you can't scale.
I can't reach things on the top shelf of the supermarket. I couldn't jump up to get a balcony. If you had a ladder, I'd have a shot at it, but I can't do it. It's not my fault. It's genetics on this site. It's my parents' fault.
Well,
so, you know.
Is there someone that you could tag team with to save a small child, Susan? Because it seems a little bit defeatist.
So there was a lot of French people around the bottom saying I would help, only I haven't got a height and I have got a passport, so... Really, really.
This is the story of Malian Spider-Man Mamadou Gassama, whose feat of scaling four floors of an apartment block to rescue a dangling child resulted in his being granted French citizenship, proving that no good deed goes unpunished. Of course, it all depends on what paper you read. Mine described this as an immigrant attempting to burgle a fourth-floor apartment before being foiled by an intrepid baby. It was actually quite rude of him, because as we all know, in Paris, a child hung outside the window means do not disturb. Amazing that he had the presence of mind to climb the building, unlike all those other bystanders who were too busy writing letters to the Times saying they'd just seen the first dangling four-year-old of spring. 2 points to Susan. Helen, who needs to learn their ABCs and Fs?
Oh, this must be the story about swearing. So a neuroscientist called Emma Byrne has said that young people should be taught to swear so that they can properly contextualise it within their lives and learn the usefulness of swearing. And I read this and I kind of thought, literally the whole point of swearing is that it's taboo, that it's stuff you're not meant to say, right? So I feel quite grateful always to my parents that they were incredibly strict, because that gave me something to rebel against. But if you tell your kids it's okay to swear, that's a bit like having those parents who kind of go, hey, if you want to know anything about threesomes, just ask your mum and me. No one wants that. No one wants that. And
I sense there's an anecdote quite near the surface.
No one wants that twice, Miles.
I mean, my dad was a swinger who ran a sex shop, so I can
anecdotal way.
Absolutely. People used to say to me all the time, oh, your dad ran a sex shop, that must be, you know. So it was fine, apart from take your daughter to work day. That was... No girl should have to do a dildo stock take with her dad. That's all I'm saying. You're right, it's hard to rebel against it. How do you rebel against it? I had to do the only thing I could do to piss off my dad. I had to join my local Christian youth group. Sneak out the house on a Saturday afternoon, I'd come back in, he'd be like, I know where you've been, young lady, you smell of Tizer and ping pong.
The Obamas had a brilliant thing, which is that they always said, we don't mind if our daughters get tattoos, but we'll get the exact same tattoo in the exact same place. Absolutely genius parental removal of any attempt at rebellion.
Do you say the Obamas?
Yeah, remember them.
I've got Gin and Regret Rianne tattooed across both buttocks.
There's a great deal of what's happening this evening that I'm not sure I'll be able to process for some time. From my personal experience, my parents were very against swearing of any kind. In fact, I don't think I've ever heard my parents swear, ever. What, I've never
even
heard...
like a bloody? Or...
There might have been a bloody, but that, I mean, they would have had to be enraged for that to happen. I've never heard them swear. I love swearing. I do it all the time. I swear really.
They've done,
you know,
research, haven't they, that it soothes pain.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Which does beg the question: why did Sean Ryder still need all that heroin?
I sometimes swear in front of my children. Not deliberately. It will just happen. I'm not a very controlled person. And what I always say to them: you shouldn't repeat the language that I've just used. But if you do, and your mother asks you where you heard it, it was the builders.
I've heard you swear in front of your children.
Have you?
Yeah, when I stayed at your house. I managed not to swear in front
of... Sorry about the guest. what did I...
it was that, yeah.
My grandmother was so anti-swearing. So, and I remember coming round to her house once and I'd been learning about World War II at school. And I said to her that I thought Hitler was a dickhead. And she went, language. So, Hitler was a dickhead. She said, yeah, but there's no need for you to stoop to his level.
Yeah, that's the thing that really did it for me and Hitler. When I heard what a potty mouth he was.
I want to quantify, because my parents didn't swear either.
Yeah.
So where does the... Have they done a shit in front of you?
No, it's the reason why my parents have never seen me do a stand-up show. One of the reasons is that because I swear. And I could not think of their I've already disappointed them enough. Whereas they listen to the news quiz, because you're not allowed to swear in the news quiz. So this reinforces my parents' image of me as a nice person. So if you're listening, Mum and Dad, I'm doing really well, and I never swear.
When I worked at the Daily Mail, I had to ask once about what the policy was about what swear words you're allowed in the newspaper. And
so it depends which minority you're talking about.
No, and the answer I got was, sometimes we let a fart slip through.
Is fart a swear?
In the Daily Mail.
In the Daily Mail.
Ladies, please. Susan's parents are listening to this.
This story...
Oh, no, it's just when I was a kid, I had to write a story for my home. I was about five, and I wasn't very good at spelling, and I asked my cousin how you spell forest, because I wanted to write a story about the enchanted forest, and he told me it was spelled F-A-R-T. So I handed in the enchanted fart.
These are the findings of neuroscientist Emma Byrne, who says that teaching children how to swear effectively can help their social and linguistic development. This is in a speech to be given to Cheltenham Ladies College, who, as we all know, love a bit of blue. I really couldn't agree more. It's not fair when you see a child step on a plug and not be able to find the right words. It's also been suggested that swearing can make you calmer, which doesn't entirely ring true. If that were the case, then I would not emerge from the driver's seat after even the shortest of journeys, looking like the woman who gets let out of the sweatbox in Django Unchained. Sometimes you just have to have a really good swear to let all the stress out. Why do you think the Pope looks so calm? That's not divine grace, it's the serenity of a man who's just told a nun very specifically where to go. 2 points to Helen. Angela, have a listen to this. Angela, whose pool's going down like a lead balloon?
So, this is the story of a bitter feud between Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin and Take That's Robbie Williams over planning permission as their neighbours in Holland Park. And Robbie Williams would like to build a swimming pool in his basement, and Jimmy Page is against this idea. And I think what this really helps at this moment in time is for us to remember that however bad things may seem, there's always someone worse off than you. My heart really goes out to those multimillionaires. It really does. I've seen a picture of Jimmy Page's house. I don't know if you've seen it. And it's beautiful. But I can't help thinking it's the sort of place that if it were in a town centre, by now it would be a Wetherspoons. And I think personally that Jimmy Page is just a bit bitter because he never got planning permission for that stairway to heaven. A groan is exactly what I was going for. So.
He's got a stairlift to heaven now. But we wanted to dig out our basement to have a pool, so we had to wait till the downstairs neighbours were out. Put gaffer tape over their letterbox and then overflow the bath. It's great.
It can be a tricksy thing. I recently moved a house. And the neighbours are lovely. They're absolutely delightful people. So I enjoy teasing them slightly, the more traditional neighbours in the street. So I said to my neighbour, Maureen, I said, because we've got a front door and it's got glass in it and stuff, and I said, do you know what I'm going to do, Maureen? And she said, what, Susan? I said, well, Maureen, I'm going to paint the door dark blue and put a police box sign on the top of it so it looks like the TARDIS, right? Just for a laugh, because then when you walk in the house, you go, oh, it's bigger on the inside. I thought, oh, that'll be brilliant. And she said, I'll report you to the police. And so, I mean, how would that bring down the area?
Have you gained lawful access to Maureen's property before posing these questions to her?
Well, we've all got keys to each other's houses, which is brilliant. So you can just pop in and out when they're not there.
Have you? And,
yeah, it's a really, really nice street where we've all got keys to each other's houses.
Hello, I'm your new neighbour. I've just come round to collect your key.
I used to live in a one-bedroom flat on my own. We have very thin walls. And I used to chat to the neighbour, Sheila, just sort of occasionally on my way in. And then I realised that, oh, well, I've got a Henry Hoover, right? And it's lonely living on your own, so I used to talk to it quite a lot. And then I once got an invite to Sheila's barbecue addressed to Angela and Henry. She must have thought it was some sort of sugar daddy or something. She overheard me asking him, telling me it was time to change his bag. I don't know.
One of my favourite occurrences with my neighbours right next door, it's a semi-detached house, was we don't have a basement, we've got like a crawl space, and we'd had a bottle of wine, and I said, I wonder if I could crawl under my house into your house and come out through your toilet.
Oh, my. I doubt Maureen's sleeping well at the moment. How are you feeling about this, Helen?
I fell down a complete hole of reading about other celebrity feuds because, like Angela, I just thought, what I want to see is rich people being unhappy. Mm. And there was a story about how John Cage, the avant-garde composer, lived next door to John and Yoko and went round to tell them to turn the noise down, which I really appreciated. He must have been a great neighbour because there was a whole composition he did that was just the sound of silence. So when he had his music on really loud late at night, no one could tell. And then Sharon Osbourne went mad at her next-door neighbour and threw a ham over the hedge.
A ham?
Yes, a ham, if
perfect
you will.
Neighbour.
Was it an old ham or was it? I mean, if I walked
ding
into...
Ding dong, just left a casserole outside.
If I walked into my...
Ding dong, quiche. Ding dong, it's a selection of starters. Ding dong, just an amuse bouche. Sorry, Susan. Ding dong, pudding! Ding dong, can I clear your table? Sorry, Susan.
I'm not sure that's a pun. If I walked into my back garden and there was a ham there, I'd go, that's a present.
What would you throw over if they were a vegetarian or vegan?
Probably like a nut roast or something.
That wouldn't cohere though. That would implode like a bad space shuttle flight. That would sort of implode in orbit over the garden. You'd just scatter their garden in bits of nut.
Not if you wrapped it properly, Helen, and collapse in collapsible Tupperware, which I have. Sorry, I took an antihistamine earlier on. I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah.
This is the planning dispute between rock star neighbours Robbie Williams and Jimmy Page over the former's wish to excavate a basement swimming pool. You'd think they'd have more in common, given that between them, these two men have recorded four of the greatest albums of all time. Led Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin 2, Led Zeppelin 3, and Led Zeppelin 4. It's a little-known fact that the great Blur versus Oasis war of 95 started over an unlicensed gazebo. Robbie Williams bought the house off Michael Winner, which means that in addition to his many musical achievements, he's also managed to become a worse neighbour than Michael Winner. 2 points to Angela. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Jeremy.
Miles, I was handed a piece of paper from the local newspaper in Abergavenny when I was there outside the Borough Theatre last week, and it's from the Small Lads, the Lonely Hearts, and it said, "Farmer seeks lady for friendship and evenings in and out."
Angela.
This is some unfortunate wording in the Times that was spotted by Christopher Klinger. It's an article about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle supporting World AIDS Day. It says, "Charity bosses were delighted that Harry and Meghan had chosen to help commemorate World AIDS Day as their first event together. CEO Ian Green said, 'Prince Harry has been a supporter of our charity and the cause of HIV for a long time now.'"
Helen.
This is from Alistair McAlpine in Wellington, New Zealand. "A flasher has been sentenced to community service in Rotorua District Court. He initially claimed he was trying to get the wood chips out of his underpants before coming clean."
Susan.
Jonathan Oliver saw this in a village hall in Dorset. "Events in Langton Village Hall. Wednesdays. Defibrillator familiarisation training. No charge."
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Angela have 8, but this week's winners are Helen and Susan with 9. Before we leave you, here is a letter to the editor of Cornwall newspaper The West Briton, sent in by Martin Beckett.
"As a resident of Falmouth, I feel that dogs should be kept off beaches at all times and owners should be responsible for them. Dog poo is very dangerous, and so if owners want to take their dogs out, they should poo in their gardens first."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Angela Barnes, Helen Lewis and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, James Kettle and Ian Smith. With additional material by Laura Major and Chris Stokes. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.